A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, you're listening to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one place to be for an audio adventure into the world of guitar geekery. But if at the end of an hour-long excursion you're chomping at the bit for more, then head on over to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where we'll be dishing out not only the Patreon special, but the Hall of Fame podcast as well. This week, I'll be reading 50 Shades of Grey in one breath. I probably won't do that, but patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Turn it off and don't touch me.
Jay Cross.
Hi, Joe.
And Matthew Knight.
Why roast when you can toast?
Yes, and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. There you go, Jay Cross. I actually brought my intro down. I tamed it and made it more normal.
And in response to that, and in gratitude, I toned mine up a bit.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate
that.
Something to do with your abs.
Yes, well, thank you very much. It was good. So, this week on the Guitar Nerds Podcast, it's the, what do you call the opposite of the Eve?
The Steve.
No, what do you call the other, when it's after?
The morning?
No, sure no, when it's, one. When it's, the eve is the bit before, what
post.
Is it when it's after?
Post?
This
Boxing
is
Boxing Day.
This is the Boxing Day of the, of the UK.
The guitar show.
Yeah, the guitar show UK.
Bring on the cold meats.
Which is the Birmingham guitar
they don't
show.
They don't have Boxing Day in the US. Nobody's going to know what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. What? What do they do the day after Christmas Day?
They go back to work.
Oh, really? Gutted. And we sit around and watch boxing.
You know, in Japan, they don't actually have Christmas. They go to work, but their tradition is KFC.
Yeah.
So on Christmas Day, they go to work and have KFC.
That was a fantastic tradition that was put together by the Japanese KFC marketing department.
You know what you want to do, right? Unless your family wants to have a bad Christmas, get KFC.
Genius.
And good on them. Good on them, I say.
Anyway,
so
it was the Birmingham Guitar Show over the weekend. And Matt Knight, you were exhibiting there with Boss.
I was. I can't believe it was 24 hours ago. It feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, and me and Mark Packham went up to Birmingham to see the show.
It was a 4.5 hour journey and back.
So Jay couldn't come, and Jay is our only driver. Jay's our designated driver. So without Jay, we were faced with what would be a 3 hour train journey to Birmingham, which is fine. Only just for this week, there are no trains out of our hometown of Brighton going towards London, meaning there is bus replacement.
I hate the bus in any form.
I also find it hilarious that all of my best mates, the three people, other people that do this podcast, two of them also can't drive.
Yeah. Listen, I actually didn't have anything going on this weekend. I really wanted you two to appreciate me for more than just my
driving prowess.
No. Like that's another thing I wanted you to appreciate before, as opposed to, you know, my soothing dulcet tones and,
they are
and
dulcet
vast
and soothing.
Vast knowledge of guitars
and when
accessories.
When I was on my way home on the bus last night, when I was sat behind a man who was guffing away for most of the journey, I really appreciated you, Jay Cross.
So on Friday night, no, Saturday night, so we were going to go up on to the show on Saturday, as we've done the last few years.
Yeah.
But
going to stay overnight in a hotel.
We were going to stay overnight
have
in a hotel.
Have a few drinks.
Like we've done in the past.
Me and Mark would share a bed.
Yep. Again, as has been the
tradition.
Yep. But no, I accidentally double booked us by booking a gig and asking Mark's band to play. So we went to this show on Saturday night, and it was really good. But at about, I don't know, it was probably about midnight. And Mark had had, you know, a pint and a half, and so was completely and absolutely blotto. And he was like, if I just, like, you know, turn my phone off and just like don't pick up the phone, would you be mad at me? Would you be mad at me? And I was like, I just don't think you should do it. Like, I don't care because I'm not going to be there, but I just don't think you should do that. And he was like, I just think it'd be really funny to go.
I was seriously considering it.
Oh no. I was fully aware. I was so fully aware that Mark was testing the waters with me. I kept receiving text messages being like, saying things like, oh, I'm so far gone. I'm so drunk.
I'm
so out of it. Four pints is a lot for you, but yes. But yes. So also on another note, before we dive into it, Guitar Nerds as a team have to attend maybe between 3 and 5 events every year. Most of those events are on the same dates every year, and two of you managed to book something else that was happening.
Yep.
On this. Okay.
And just a quick one. How was NAMM, Joe? Yeah, how was when you went to NAMM? Also the London guitar show. How was that?
Sorry,
I'm talking. Shut up. How about Kempton? How was that when you went to that one?
Did I miss that one?
Yes,
too?
Yes, you did. Yeah.
Who gets paid for doing this now?
Yeah, I was confused about it because
it was the weekend. It was my day off.
When I was on the bus,
no such thing.
Not when you're a contractor. Right. Get the work done.
Right. That's right.
Or get out.
Right. Okay. Anyway, before we actually go into talking about the Birmingham Guitar Show, because it was great and we did see a ton of cool stuff whilst we were there. But before we talk about that, we actually we got a few things through the post this week also that we've tried out.
Can we introduce a new jingle here that's like mailbag or something like that?
That's a good idea. Here it is.
Mailbag.
That was quick.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? Yeah,
you made that on the spot. Yeah,
I can't believe you did that. That's fantastic.
Thank you. I've got to remember.
I hope you don't. And the jingle is just Matt laughing silent. And then trying to stay quiet.
Yes. Anyway, Matt, you received a couple of the new pedals from Exotic, the Super Sweet, and what's the other one? The Super Clean.
The Super Clean. Yeah. So you kindly dropped them off on Sunday at the show because you posted a picture, and I was like, these look awesome. Mainly for the color of the Super Sweet, I was like,
it's like
it just looks like a great pedal.
It's a gorgeous like red sides with the same black top. So it's Exotic Effects who. Obviously, they're kind of known for their booster and their compressor. Is it the
and
SP?
The drive? The SL drive, the SP
SL drive,
compressor.
SP compressor. I used to use the SP compressor. It's fantastic. Now, they're mini pedal size, but they're always a little bit deeper. They weigh an absolute ton. They're incredibly well built. And the Super Sweet and Super Clean come with the addition of, rather than having a load of controls on the top, they have one mini rotary on the top, which seems a bit weird because there's definitely room for a normal sized knob. On the side of the on the side of the pedal, it's got four dip switches that affect various EQs for the Super Sweet and the Super
Clean. Is their font Comic Sans?
It's not quite Comic Sans. No, it's a bit more 60s
okay
than that. But Matt, tell us about the pedals because you've actually tried them out.
I have. So they are absolutely I'm in my running for gear of the year. As a make gooderer, the Super Sweet is absolutely amazing. And basically, it's just a set and forget like mini pot on the top. And then you've just got a few EQ switches on the side. And those EQ switches determine what frequencies it boosts, basically, when you turn it on. So the Super Clean is more of a buffer.
Yeah, they market it as being the Super Clean buffer and the Super Sweet booster. Even though both of them have a gain control, the only rotary is a gain control in both cases.
Yeah, so they both have 20 dB of gain, which is massive. And they both have the same EQ settings on the dip switches, but one is more of a preamp and one is more of a clean boost. Was a buffer with a clean boost. So the Super Sweet has got a little bit more sort of tonal character to it, no matter what you put the dip switches in, just because it's based on the JRC, I forget the exact one.
4558.
That's the one. So the Tube Screamer op amp, basically. So yeah, it's just got a little bit more of a richer character. The Super Clean was really nice, and it reminded me very much of the Class A Boost from Pigtronics. Just like straight ahead, great volume boost, no real kind of major shift, but it just made everything sound really, really nice. But the Super Sweet added like a really nice sort of warm character to it.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say is it's almost got too much gain on tap, like 20 dB. It's just like if you get up to halfway, it's just like absolutely like crazy volume. And after a weekend of the guitar show, I was like, I'm going to dial it down very, very slightly. But it's really good if you want to take something in, if you want to like drive your amp a little bit harder. Obviously, you've got all that on there. But I think it's designed to be very much set and forget, which I really like. I just set the Super Sweet and I was just like, oh, I'll just leave it on that. And then as soon as I turned it off, I was like, oh, I miss how good that sounded.
Yeah.
So I just turned it back on again.
A proper make gooder. But yeah, I mean, they make fantastic pedals and these look, you know, to be honest.
It is super well built. I mean, they're just... They like you say, they've just got so much weight to them. And you're like, oh, that feels like a really, really solid unit.
Yeah.
And it also, they don't really mention if it makes much difference, but well, like with all the exotics, you can run them either 9 to 18 volt. So I'd imagine if you run 18 volt, you probably just get a little bit more headroom.
Yeah, yeah, super cool.
Do you know what? Looking at their site, I'd completely forgotten that they make guitars.
Well, that was actually what I knew them for, first of all, because Exotic make fantastic sort of Fender-like custom shop basses. They really kind of came into their own. I think they were most popular around the time that, you know, there was that period where all like pro-level bass players were getting rid of their Fenders and were getting Lacklands. And it was like Exotic were one of those companies that were sort of considered up there with... there were a couple of others. I can't remember
Sandberg.
The names. Sandberg.
Sandberg
was sort of there. Nash were there, yeah, absolutely. There were kind of a handful of others as well, all really similar, offered a similar thing, but it was essentially, yeah, sort of Fender custom shop, but a bit more.
Yeah, it's just a P bass.
Yeah, exactly.
Something else to buy that isn't the thing that everyone else has already got for good reason.
But the Exotic stuff does look really, really, really good, the instruments.
See, I didn't know they made instruments until we saw them. I think it was at Summer Nam was when I... the first time I saw some in the flesh, and I thought, oh, right, wow, they've moved from pedals to instruments.
Oh, I wonder which way around it happened.
See, I've actually got no idea. I was just going on the website to have a little look.
My feeling is that it was instruments first.
See, that would probably make most sense.
They don't do enough pedals for it to be pedals.
They
first.
Do a lot of pedals. Known them for their pedals, though. Because they do things like the BB Boost.
Oh, of course they
AC
do.
Boost.
I love the BB Boost. The yellow
ever
one.
Done boosts, really. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
They've had a bunch of signature pedals as well for people. So I've only ever known. So I thought the guitars was like a totally new venture. And they were just like, oh, we're just making these just like high-end Fender-esque instruments all of a sudden. But like Mark said, they've probably been making them for ages and just...
Looking at the company history now, so they started in 1998 in Southern California with a product called the RoboTalk 1. And then it looks like then
still
they did
in
the
production. Oh no, RoboTalk 2 is
yeah. So then they did the AC booster, the RC booster, and the BB preamp in 2002 to 2005. And then after that, it looks like that's when the guitars started to arrive.
Wow.
So hang on. Really? In fact, okay. So this is the actual timeline. So RoboTalk started in 1998. Then September 2002, the AC booster. November 2002, the RC booster. January 2005, the BB preamp. And then their first bass was the exotic bass XJ1T in September 2008.
Focus on the J, I assume.
Yeah, definitely. What's really interesting is that the EP booster has been in production since 2009.
Wow. 2009?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is it... Is the current one like a Model 2?
No, No, I'm thinking of MXR. I was thinking of the Ekaplex. I think they've only ever done the EP.
Yeah, since 2009, and then the SP compressor since 2012.
Holy heck!
Right. Yeah, it's a long old time.
Yeah, well, they're absolutely fantastic pedals. I'm not incredibly surprised. So, moving on to the bulk of this podcast, which is going to be about the awesome things that we saw at the Birmingham Guitar Show. When me and Mark turned up on the Sunday, the first thing we saw was probably Matt Knight.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the Boss booth was right at the front, and there you were, Matt, with what's that rack control volume pedal you do?
It's just a really expensive volume pedal. The tube amp expander.
Yeah, you had the
The whole time we were there, Joe was going out to people who work for Boss going, it's just a volume pedal, isn't it? It's a volume pedal. And despite everyone going, you're a massive idiot, including people who were not affiliated with Boss, just random people listening to his conversation going, you're a total
The general
knob.
Public is a lot more perceptive than you expect.
They look at him and they see that he's a knob.
Yeah, yeah.
So hello. It's not hard to perceive. But yeah, it seemed like the response was really positive, Matty.
Yeah, yeah, it was. We had a Friedman B100 and a 4x12, and I was like, you can take a loud amp and attenuate it. But I was like, oh, I really want to show off like taking a smaller amp and making it much louder. So we bought a Victory BD1, and it sounded absolutely amazing because it's quite a gainy amp, but you could kind of turn it down and get sort of more of a like a Marshall-y sort of plexi vibe out of it. And then just give it an extra like 100 watts. And then it's got no reverb or delay. So everything was there. And it's just like, it was a great sound. So we just ended up using that for almost the entire weekend.
Oh, I thought you were using a Friedman.
We were, but we had that other Victory there. And we just ended up using that loads. Yeah. And loads of people were like, that combination sounds amazing. But yeah, the response was...
A combination amp.
Yeah, it was really, really positive. I'm really pleased. And it was actually good to spend a lot more time with it as well.
Yeah, it was good to kind of see it out because I guess everything else from Boss at the moment is kind of things that have been out for a little while as well.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the only thing. That was the only kind of real new thing that we had. And we wanted to kind of make that a focus. And obviously we've got some cool old stuff, so we wanted to put some Space Echoes. And
yeah, there were Space Echoes out in cabinets that you couldn't touch.
I saw a post on one of the forums that I'm in that had a picture of, was it three or four Space Echoes that you had, Matty?
From the show, I had five.
Five, okay. Oh, all of them except for my one, was it? Still don't
have
one of those, is it? Mm, interesting.
I've got a 501.
Feel
I just
free,
don't have the
555. Well, I just don't have the 555.
Basically the same.
Well, you know, just feel free to make me an offer, it's fine. Anyway, I saw a picture that someone had took, and they were like, oh, look at these, don't these look cool? And the first comment was, why on earth would you tour with these tape echoes on glass shelving? And it's like, this isn't a band, mate. What's wrong with you? Like,
that's the best comment ever.
So dumb.
So anyway, from the Boss booth, me and Mark backtracked to the far right-hand corner where there was a combination booth of Hampstead amplifiers and Fidelity guitars.
Yeah.
Sharing a booth, which was an excellent combination of British boutiqueness, I thought. Hampstead amps obviously are absolutely fantastically built.
I haven't spent much time with them, but you do them. Well, you did them at GAC.
They're kind of our sort of main boutique thing, to be honest.
Yeah.
I can't say our anymore.
No.
They're sort of main boutique amp at the moment. But yeah, they're absolutely fantastically built.
It was. They were so popular that we didn't actually get to spend any time with them at the show.
Oh,
because
you can't hear anything.
Sure. That's one thing we should mention. The show was ridiculously loud. So when we're talking about this stuff, we're about to talk about Fidelity in a moment. We did actually plug it in. Like, I plugged in the new Super Rosa. That's how you pronounce it, right? Super Rosa?
Super Rosa.
Super Rosa.
Yeah, that's right.
couldn't tell you what it sounds like, because even though Matt walked us through all the sounds, literally couldn't hear anything. Something needs to be done at the show about the noise.
Yeah.
Because it peaked out at 106 decibels on the stand at one point. And for reference, at NAMM, obviously they're a little bit more strict on volume, and they do come around and they do give you warnings. I remember when we were there 2017, Beat Buddy got shut down completely before the end of the entire show. That's their decibel limit is 89.
Yeah,
it's too loud. That's bad.
It is. I did think that was my only criticism of the show. I wish they'd actually had someone there who was taking some control for the volume in between, because it was wonderful to go around and look at the stuff. But you know, we go to lots of guitar shows. There's no other guitar show that has such a lack of control that, you know, that this, it's impossible to have a conversation with anyone at points.
Matt, what did you say the dB rating was?
106 at one point.
106. So that's roughly equivalent to a steel mill, a turbofan aircraft takeoff, and a riveting machine.
I was just doing exactly the same thing.
non-stop for 8 hours.
It's the average human pain threshold, 16 times as loud as 70 dB.
I must admit, at one point, I was like, ow.
Yeah.
And that's when I just had to walk away. And the quiet time was just like... The thing was, as soon as the clacks went off for quiet time, it was like, it just, you know, it silenced straight away and everyone like cheered. But then as soon as I did it again, like people just cranked amps to like max.
Yeah.
Like, but that's been the case for the last couple of years when we went. It seems like to me, whenever we go to the Birmingham Guitar Show, because this is your third year? The 2 years that I've went, it's like almost everybody wants it to be the other way around. Wants it to be like, because it's 15 minutes of
they changed
it this time. It was half an hour of quiet time every hour.
It
definitely didn't seem like that. It seemed like 15 minutes in every hour.
Yeah.
No, it was that was it, because I had the they gave everyone a list of the times.
Right. Okay. Right.
Apart from the first hour and a half of the day, but it was funny because for me, I was trying to showing off like an attenuator and an amp running through monitors, and when you're next to like amps, like valve amps that need to be like totally cranked, when you're just like, oh, look, listen to how good it sounds when you can turn it down, it's like totally pointless.
We did say, like, as you said, when Matt Oram from Fidelity Guitars was trying to talk us through the Super Rosa, obviously
I couldn't hear what he was saying, because he was talking so we should talk about the Fidelity
stuff. Let's talk about the Fidelity, because they had three things that I was a big fan of.
So the Super Rosa is a guitar that brand new design from Fidelity. We put a picture up in the Facebook group. There is a shell pink one, which I think was probably, you know, laser targeted at us. But it's kind of it's a new body shape, so slightly more softer than their standard body shape. This one had three pickups on there, three P90s with kind of custom designed housing.
So they're Monty's pickups
with some kind of custom designed metal housing.
Yes, which make them look kind of much wider. They almost have a sort of steampunk kind
Look. They're the Charlie Christian.
That's kind of what they look like, yeah. Baseball. Charlie Christiansen. A completely designed trem system, so designed from the ground up, kind of like a Jazzmaster trem, but yeah, built specifically for this guitar. Matt was actually saying he wants everything on the guitar to be things that he has designed, so there's no
cool
kind of stock parts on there. But yeah, so the switching system is such that you've got like a mini toggle on there that switches between two different tone circuits, and you've got like volume for... So it's hard to describe. So two separate tone circuits, and there's a volume for each,
right,
and then there's a pickup selection for each. Oh. So you've got on the back one, I think it was bridge, in phase, out of phase, and middle on its own. And then the one further forward was, I think, middle on its own, in phase, out of phase with the neck, and then neck on its own.
Right.
And then you could essentially switch between those two. So if you wanted to go from bridge and neck, bridge to neck, for example, you'd put the back selector on the bridge pickup and then the front selector on the neck pickup, and then toggle between those two. But
that's
if your two favorite sounds were neck or bridge and middle in phase, then you'd set that up, sound up and switch between the two. So, yeah, pretty unique switching system.
Yeah, great.
Overall, I thought it felt more slightly more heavyweight than their...
It was a very weighty guitar.
I mean, there's
guitar,
a lot of metal on there.
There is, but actually, yeah. It wasn't unwieldy. It actually just felt a bit more together. Like, the whole... It's hard to describe, but the whole build and the fact that it was a bit more chunky and the fact that it was kind of less round... it just made it feel a bit more substantial than the rest of the stuff.
It was heavyweight, though. I would say it was akin to sort of a Les Paul.
Sure. But then, like Jay was saying, there's a lot of metal work.
Of course. But yeah, it's fantastic.
To be honest, I would really like to hear it when there's not a jet plane sound in the background, so I can actually hear what those pickups sound like, because I couldn't hear it at all at the show.
Matt from Fidelity was saying that even the tip to the trem is an old bead that he got because he wanted to have he wanted tortoiseshell tips for the trem system, which of course you can't buy anymore. So he was buying old necklaces off of an Etsy shop and then drilling them out to create the
interesting.
Tip. Yeah, it's really cool. And he had the bass there as well, which is his more traditional guitar body shape.
I believe it's called the double standard.
Yeah, the double standard, which had like a lovely gold anodized plate which went across sort of both wings of the guitar. I don't know what the pickups were. They were modelled on his old Rickenbacker 4001.
Yeah, that's what he said. The idea was he wanted to recreate with this bass.
Which was exactly... I did crank the bass quite a lot. Did you tell me to turn it down at one point?
It was incorrect. No, I didn't tell you to turn it down. One of the sound people came, one of the sound police came over and said, turn it down. Basically, you're the problem.
I was trying to hear it above everything else. But yeah, it did sound absolutely
That's
fantastic.
That's what everyone says. I'm just trying to hear this over
everything else. Well, I thought it sounded great. It did sound very Rickenbacker-y.
Yeah.
From what I could tell sort of through that. I mean, what can you tell? But yeah, it was really nice. And also Matt said he's working on a 30.5 inch scale, short scale version of the bass, which will be super cool because that will be slightly more traditional. And I kind of feel everything else about his guitars is so retro and traditional that sort of scale length will suit them a bit more. But that was super cool. Really like the bass.
Yeah, I thought it sounded, because I had a quick go on it as well, and I really like the neck profile, as I do with pretty much all of his guitars that I've played. It just felt solid, and I think that's what I've really noticed with Fidelity from when we first picked them up to now. Like, everything just feels a bit more together. Like, the design has kind of standardized itself, and, you know, they've definitely got a defined look now.
Yeah.
There's kind of a bit more, how would you say it, a bit more kind of cohesion across, like, the neck profiles. Right. Like, Matt will make whatever you want, but I think when we first went, he had kind of a range of different neck profiles, and now there seems to be kind of a standard profile that he's going for. Really impressed by those two new bits.
Like, yeah, I thought they were really great.
Like, again, just raising his game.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do think, ultimately, I think I kind of agree with Jay. I'd be really excited to see like a hardtail single pickup version of the Super Rosa.
Well, you're agreeing to something that I said in the Facebook group.
Yeah.
Just don't want people thinking that they're, you know, they've missed part of the conversation.
Oh, right. I see. Yes, sorry. Yes.
For me, I'd keep the three pickups, but I'd put a hardtail on it.
Three pickups is too much for me.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Who are you
agreeing
with?
He's agreeing with me, I think. Yeah.
No, so, never agree with
Matt, just chop up. So I agree. I think it'd be great as
You agree with you?
I agree with me.
I often agree with me.
As you all should. I think the shape is great, and I think the whole design is really cool, and obviously it's pink, which is amazing. And there's just too much going on for it for me.
That kind of longer body kind of reminds me of like a Firebird or something. Slightly elongated body shape.
Firebird.
It reminded me of those Firebird rectangular Dan Electros.
Yeah, that came it's got out that in kind the of 90s. Vibe as well. Yeah, definitely.
That sort of price as well, I assume, yeah?
It's like, what were they, a couple of £100?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Okay, sounds good. Okay, cool.
I can't actually remember what the price was.
I think they were like 2.5. Yeah. Whereas I think normally they're like... 9. Yeah, normally I think that his double standards are often around 1,700, 1,900, something like that.
Yeah.
They were super cool. From there we detoured the whole way up. We tried to do a bit of a walk around because we were like let's just walk around and see what's there. And the first thing we saw was the Fidelity Hampstead booth and spent the next 30 minutes there. We're not doing a good job of actually walking around and seeing what's here. And so we headed from there over to the Xander circuitry booth, where they had something very interesting. He had a prototype of a pedal totally different from anything that's in the Xander circuitry catalog. Because, listener, if you haven't checked out the Xander circuitry catalog, they're all there's a fantastic tape echo which we're a big fan of. He's actually introduced
the tape deck.
He's introduced two new drives as well. There were two drives that were.
Yeah, so one of them is a new version of a pedal that he currently makes, which I've completely forgotten the name of. And then he's also doing a new preamp pedal as well. None of this will be on the website yet.
No.
Because it's all prototype stuff. But the thing that was most exciting was the Junipero prototype, which is kind of double the size of the models that he currently makes.
It's 4 foot switches.
Yeah, 4 foot switches on there. And it's his first... I don't know if it's the tape deck's digital, right, Matt?
Yes.
I believe it is. So it's not his first digital pedal, but it's quite a lot more in depth than the tape deck. So what did he say? Something like 9 different modulations?
Yeah, something.
Yeah,
like
basically a lot of different modulation effects. And I think what this showed for me, so the 4 foot switches, I believe, are on, off, and then patch and bank up.
Right.
So it's got some presets that you can set in there, and also a tap tempo. And for me, it was like one of the first times when, you know, the British builders that we've seen kind of like come from just doing fuzzes and drives have actually made something that's like, oh, this is actually really complicated. You know, this is the next stage in what you would build if you were building stuff. You'd build probably a fuzz and a boost first. Then you might do like a kind of more rugged overdrive. And then a lot of builders would just kind of stop there, you know, and just keep doing a range of drives because drives are relatively easy to build. And Xander has gone, oh no, I'm going after the like Strymon or, you know, Wampler or something like that. So it's also MIDI in and out. Did he also say it's USB?
I can't remember. I couldn't hear.
Yeah, it had a range of ins and outs on the back, including MIDI and some other kind of connectivity things. And it's got like kind of almost like a kind of digital, it's not digital, I guess it's like lights on the front that show you which bank and preset you're on. It really is the next stage up from like the drive pedals that he's been making.
Yeah.
Didn't get to hear it though because it was too loud.
No, he did offer us to try it out, and I think he did have headphones there, but I was just like, even with the headphones, I'm not going to get a good idea of what this sounds. And actually, I kind of don't like, I wouldn't want to hear it through headphones.
Completely.
I want to hear this properly. It sounds like a really cool idea. And when it's finished, I'll be really excited to check that out. But yeah, I agree. Super awesome.
He's also changed the enclosures on the new pedals.
He did that a little while ago.
No. Again, he's changed.
Oh, really?
I don't know if you noticed that actually they were a little bit shallower.
Oh, I see.
So, you know, with the tape deck and stuff, it's like quite a chunky box. Yeah. These are all just a little bit, they're not quite as deep. So, again, if you're looking at kind of putting a load of stuff on a pedal board, pedal height sometimes comes into play if you're putting a lid on and stuff. These are a little bit kind of shallower, so it should be easier to squeeze in.
Oh, cool. Sweet. Yeah, from there, we went over to Shergold. Now, Shergold had, surprisingly, used this event to launch a new guitar, which I thought was a touch odd, because surely you'd use NAMM to launch your new guitar, right?
Were they there?
Well, they're a British brand, aren't they? So they're supporting the British show.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
Joe, were they there?
At NAMM?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, there you go then.
Well, probably. Surely. Surely Shergold were there. Anyway. Yes.
You're right there, mate.
Yes, I'm
getting through it.
Fine.
Come on. I know you're tired after the weekend.
Yes. Okay. Fine. Anyway, Shergold announced and released their new Provocateur, which is their first new body shape. What was the first one called? The Marauder or the Masquerader?
Yeah, Masquerader.
Masquerader. Because Matt, you and me got like 3 of them to try out.
Yeah, they're just amazing guitars for the money. Solid rosewood neck. We were wondering how they were going to get around with the solid rosewood neck. That was the only thing at the time. And I didn't get to see this. So I don't know what the...
You didn't see this?
I didn't, no. I barely got time to walk around. I think I had about 1 quick lap on Saturday and then the same on Sunday.
To be honest, when we went to the booth, it was so busy that there was no one there to talk to about the spec. So I don't think we even got the spec.
So there were a few models, and I wonder if they're going to be doing the same thing that they were doing with the Masquerader. But the Masquerader was now the Masquerader was an old Shergold shape. It was a double cut, listener, if you're not aware. But it was available in three pickup configurations. You could get it essentially HSS, Telecaster, or P90 and humbucker were the three options. I assume they've carried the same pickup options over onto that were similar, because
I mean the one that you took a picture of is two humbuckers,
and there was the difference being there'd be a Tele, a P90 and a humbucking, because there was also a P90 version there as well. But yes, you're right, I didn't explain that well. There was a double humbucker version and a P90 version there, which are very cool. Now the Provocateur is their single cut Les Paul Junior style instrument.
Well, I think it looks more like a Sonics.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, it does.
It's got that kind of like quirky. I don't know. I don't really know how you just. It looks a bit like a someone's made a Les Paul out of Play-Doh.
Is that like half scratch plate shape? And also
well, the scratch plate's kind of like 72 Deluxe Tele.
Yep. It has a body contour. So
yeah,
you know, like a contour on the front. So it's more like I don't know, really. You know, like. Almost like Strat contouring rather than, you know, like a Les Paul Junior flat top.
And I assume this is also designed with Patrick James Eggle.
Yes.
The guy that did the previous one.
He was at the event.
Yes,
he
was there. And I guess, there's no literature to confirm that, and we didn't get the chance to ask anyone. But I assume he's working on all of these. One thing that I noticed in the photo, which I didn't even think about at the time, is what the necks are made out of, because this doesn't look like of an all rosewood neck.
It does actually. If you look in the reflection on the photo I've taken,
reflection.
Oh, I see. That's not reflection. That's another guitar.
Yeah.
You're right. You can see
the maple or mahogany neck is there.
It looks like it's maple neck. But yeah, I didn't even think to check at the time.
Oh, no.
And like I said, we didn't get the chance to ask anyone about the guitar. So it's mahogany neck, mm-hmm. is it? Oh, okay.
Yep.
I would have loved another all rosewood neck. I think that was one of my favourite things about
solid mahogany body featuring a solid torrified mahogany neck and ebony fingerboard.
Okay. Is there any more? Because when I looked yesterday, there weren't any actual details anywhere online. So is there any info about like pickup combinations or anything?
Pickup configurations come in the form of Patrick, so there you go, he is involved. Patrick's personal choice of genuine USA made Seymour Duncan P90 and Pearly Gates.
Okay.
In the SP01.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
SD model and 259 humbuckers loaded in the SP02 SD model.
Right, so just two
all bridge humbuckers feature a push-pull coil tap for a wide array of tonal options.
Oh, wow. Okay, interesting. So they're basically, you can either get it two humbuckers or a humbucker and a P90. Yes.
I mean, I think these look absolutely fantastic. If the, I mean, the one that we saw, there was a black one and a white one at the show. If the colour options are kind of, you know, the same sort of classic nice options that there were with the Masquerader as well, I think these are wicked guitars, especially if they come in at a similar price point.
Yeah. 800 quid.
Oh, these are really good.
809 for two humbucker and 829 for the P90 humbucker.
I think these are a fantastic guitar. I do wish it had a solid rosewood neck again. That was one of the things I absolutely loved.
You know why they're not doing that,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, of course. So, of course. Absolutely. But yes, they were very, very cool indeed. And then another brand we saw, who we saw last year with you, J-Cross, was Maybach guitars.
Yeah.
The German custom shop who specialise in, you know, versions of classic Gibsons and classic Fender-alike guitars. They had a new range of stuff there, including a very nice, like, James Bay-esque.
Yeah, well, they've started doing a ton of guitars with slotted headstock, which wouldn't be my preference, I have to admit, but it seems to be the way that a lot of these kind of super high-end electrics are going. So if you have a look at things like B&G guitars, which are seemingly more and more popular, they're doing a lot of guitars with slotted headstocks, and it seems like Maybach have gone down the same route. So, yeah, kind of small-bodied F-hole guitars with slotted headstocks, but there was also even some kind of Les Paul-style guitars with slotted headstocks.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah,
I walked past, and they had, like, a 2P90, like, 335...
Yes, it wasn't like a 335 though, it was like a smaller body, almost like a kind of little parlor acoustic almost.
They just seem to do stuff and not put it on their website. Like, yeah, I found that infuriating when we met them the first time.
Yeah, what is infuriating about Maybach is, firstly, yes, they just make a ton of stuff. Like, there was a edge-bound, like a double edge-bound telly there, which I couldn't find on their site. They're also now doing colour over colour relicking.
They've got a new tier. The fella was saying there's a new tier of custom shop that they're doing, like a master built series.
Yeah.
And they had a gold sparkle over green paisley Stratocaster with an embroidered aluminium scratch plate.
Yeah, it looked, I mean, it, you know, that particular combination wouldn't be for me, but the relicking looked fantastic in the flesh. But the difficulty is finding out anything about them. Yeah. And actually getting to try one outside of a show. They haven't got a distributor in the UK. They don't have any dealers in the UK.
And also, their show, well, whilst the, you know, we've been saying you couldn't try anything out there, and we weren't trying anything out there, they'd set up their stand so you couldn't try anything out there.
He didn't have an amp. So if you wanted to plug something in, you couldn't, even, you know, at a time when, you know, there might have been a break in this kind of cacophony that was the show. If you wanted to try a Maybach, they didn't have an amp for you to try one. So yeah, that was a bit weird, but some great stuff on display.
A very nice master built cream Telecaster with a roasted maple neck.
Yes, that was lovely.
But yeah, from there, right next to them, because we were having a look at a couple of their custom shops, which were on display in some cases.
Yeah, we kind of like went around the corner and we were like, oh, it's weird because they've got stuff on this booth and it's just on stands. And then you come around the corner and they've got these like lit up display cabinets with more of their stuff in. It's like, well, this is,
you're going to like this, Jay.
Why is this? What's going on here? But then we got accosted by, you have to remind me, Rob. It was another Rob wasn't it?
Well, because the company is Rob and Rob.
Yeah, R&R. What were they actually called? R&R something, though. Furniture or something.
Something like that.
So what these guys do is make basically cabinets that you can either bolt to the wall or you can have freestanding in your house that are built specifically to display guitars.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And they...
You're right, I do like that.
Yeah.
They are just starting out, and they are basically, they'll build whatever you want on their standard design. So they've got different lighting options.
Oh yeah,
they've
can have LED lights, you can have mirror backs.
If you want a mirror behind the guitar, you can have that.
That's cool.
They're talking about also that in the pipeline they're gonna have one where you can have a screen behind, so you could be playing like videos essentially. Or if you wanted to, you could like take your guitar out and play like a lesson. So you could stand there in front of the cabinet and like play a guitar lesson, then put your guitar back.
Their whole idea is introducing the guitar into a sort of living space. And the guy was saying, look, you know, if you spend like £3,000 on a guitar, or even if you're not spending as much on that, you love a guitar, but especially if you're spending sort of £3,000-£5,000 on a guitar, what if you've got something vintage? You know, where are you storing that? Like on a stand where it's sort of rotting into the finish, under your bed. Like, what are you doing with an instrument that's so high value and is such a personal possession to you? You want it to be near you so you can play it, and you want it to be on display because it's something you've invested so much money in. Why not, you know, come up with a piece of furniture that makes you able to make it part of your living space? I thought as a concept that was great.
Yeah, I think. There was that thing on Reverb a few months ago, Mark, that guy selling all those lefty tellies, and he had that amazing display cabinet made. It's sort of just like, if you had the space in your house and you had a really nice guitar, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, I think that's a great idea.
They weren't super cheap, but at the moment they're building them as kind of one-offs, basically. Yeah. If someone goes to them, they said starting price is about £800, which is a lot, but... You know, how much does it cost you? You know, if you're going to get fitted furniture made in your house,
oh, totally.
That'll cost you a fortune.
Totally. Yeah.
And, you know, this has got like the lighting built in, and it's, you know, it's designed specifically for this purpose. So I think it's cool. It could go somewhere. I mean, for me, they're going to have to do a few different designs because I think the way that the design they currently have wouldn't really fit.
Well, no. I mean, you're saying, it suggests that a lot of it is kind of bespoke.
Yeah,
it's probably not the sort of thing that you buy off the shelf. You would probably commission them to make.
Yeah, sure.
But having a few everything
styles,
was because he was very much like, yeah, it's all British oak, and it's like, well, what if your living room's white?
Yeah,
you know, with like,
I see. What
it
you
was
mean.
Very much geared I around. I think you know the it's a great idea, great company, and the company was run by a couple of older gents who almost definitely have oak in their front rooms. You know,
right,
and
yeah,
it was it was very much geared around that. That's how you know you want to make a lifestyle piece. I think you have to make options for people who have different sort of aesthetic lifestyle choices, and this very much was one look.
Yeah.
That said, I think it was a great idea. There was also an option to have a rack at the bottom for you to have an amp fitted.
Okay.
Which was quite a cool idea as well.
Yeah, that actually, for me, like, particularly living in Brighton where you can't actually put anything on the walls because your walls will, crumble and cave in, the option with the legs, so it's almost like a freestanding unit that you can kind of screw to the wall, but the weight is held by the legs.
Yeah.
The legs basically give you a rack to put an amp on as well.
Yeah.
So you'd have your guitar, like, displayed nicely in this cabinet with the amp directly underneath.
What you want is a combination of this and, like, an ISO cab. So you can boss your tube amp in the back there,
yeah,
and just you know turn it up to 8. Right. Yeah.
Well, ideally, what you actually want is one of these, and then a Boss Katana Air.
Why not?
Literally, is you just open the cabinet, take it out there. There's no cables involved at all, and then you're just playing for your amp straight away.
Absolutely. Do you reckon you could get away with? Do you reckon Ella would be all right with you like suspending a Katana Air from the roof?
Why don't you just put it on the bookshelf?
I think you should suspend it from the roof.
I'll just wear it on my person.
I'd want some sort of smoke machine built in so that when you open the case, oh, then loads of smoke comes out the side.
Dry ice.
They are custom
dry
shop.
Dry ice, exactly. Yeah.
They could probably do that. It is a custom shop.
That's just right.
Like when they open the door to the DeLorean the first time when Einstein comes back from the future and then all the steam comes off it.
Oh, that's exactly what I want. I think we should get one made for the studio.
Yes, definitely.
100%. Definitely. So anyway, from there, we headed over to, one of the Robs from R&R is also Rob Williams, who owns, obviously, Rob Williams Guitars. He's a master luthier, a British luthier. And he had probably my favourite thing that was at the show.
Yep.
Now, the first thing we were shown of his was a very, very flamboyant, very sort of late 70s-esque Stratocaster, sort of like a carved
incredibly,
top Strat.
Yeah, incredibly well kind of figured. This is one of the guitars they're actually using to kind of show off the cabinets, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can kind of gauge the market that they're going for with the guitars and the cabinets. You know, it's people that have got a bit more money to spend, and... this guitar is, you know, it's gold hardware. It's got a jack socket on it, but it's kind of like it looks like a Strat jack socket,
but it's made of
wood,
of zebra wood,
and it's embedded into the guitar. So I'd never seen that before. Actually, I thought that was quite a neat thing.
An excellent example of luthery. But of course, for us, we were drawn way more to his more traditional stuff, which included an absolutely gorgeous, just simple, straight up 52 Telecaster.
Yeah, probably the best thing that I played at the show. I thought the profile was great, the build was great. Obviously, we didn't get to plug it in, but
subtle lacquer checking was lovely.
Yeah, in terms of the feel and the weight and the balance,
lovely bird's eye maple neck.
Yeah, it was just very much a kind of like super top end telly. Price wise, what did you say, about 2.5?
Yeah, they were actually like, yeah, it was like 2.5, which I think, you know, we spoke to a lot of like single sort of, you know, one fellow luthier shops, and the average price from them these days seems to be like 3.5, and so he was coming in well under that. I mean,
it's actually less than that. Just looking on the site now, 2,250.
What, for that telly?
For that telly, yeah. One of his tellies.
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! They were very, very, very good.
Goodness!
I was a very, very big fan of that guitar. It was absolutely fantastic, and he also had some ridiculous figured Les Paul there, which
that was his own guitar. That was one that he'd made for himself, which was, I mean, it was pretty stunning. You know, like, flame top Les Pauls are not really my thing, but that guitar was very, very eye-catching.
Yeah, yeah. From there, we went over to our new favourite guitar shop.
You're allowed to say that now.
I can say that. We went over to James's Home of Tone. James's Home of Tone, we've spoken about a bit on the podcast. James is doing the role of bringing the boutique stuff that you can't normally get in the UK into the UK on a very small scale, but nonetheless, I mean,
24-inch.
Yeah, but the for the
so funny, couldn't even talk.
Yeah. For like the listeners in the US, obviously, I think there's been enough talk from all the other guitar podcasts and plenty guitar YouTube channels about.
Sorry.
What? There are no other podcasts.
Oh, yes.
This
sorry,
is the only
sorry.
One.
Yes, it is.
That's where we're the best.
We are.
Just simply
the best.
Because there's no other option.
Yeah, there is no
I hope there isn't option. Any other option.
Goodness me.
If there is, I've never listened to one.
We'll start plummeting.
but yes, obviously Jennings guitars have been increasingly popular in the States at the moment. And over here, we've been itching to be able to get our hands on some of those Jennings tellies. But James's Home of Tone is flying the flag for that, and
the most important thing that I need to ask you is, did he have any millimetric, and did you play any?
He did not have any millimetric. They haven't come in yet, but
I tell you what, I would have left.
I'd have gone.
Not good enough. Let's move on.
Well, he did have an absolutely incredible Titan there.
Yes.
Which was very lovely. A gorgeous, like, satin surf green with a, like, tiger scratch plate, 3P90s. Oh, it was absolutely gorgeous. Single cut. I mean, that is everything you want in a guitar. And do you know how much money it is? £1,300.
I was going to say, like,
£1,200.
Yeah.
That's so affordable. It's down from £1,800 on his website
really?
At the moment.
Really? Wow. I mean, that's the thing with the Titans is they are, the Kawa guitars are absolutely fantastic. I'd love a, what's their Firebird? The Banshee? Is that the...
Yeah.
I'd love one of those because they look amazing. And just following Doug Kawa on Instagram is amazing. Just some of the stuff that he puts out is incredible. But they're so expensive, the cow stuff, and the fact that he does the Titans as well is just amazing. Some of that stuff is just absolutely astonishing, and it is really affordable. I mean, you know, affordable is very it's easy, you know, it's a very, in relative terms, it's like, it's pretty affordable.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And there was a really lovely Prisma there as well, which I thought would be bang up your street.
I didn't know what that was until you sent me a text with that picture earlier today.
It's kind of a reverse Jaguar, I guess. It felt
like a Toronado.
No, it's
a reverse Jag, but it reminds me of those guitars that Nick Reinhardt plays.
The Supersonic.
Yeah, it was cool. So humbucker in the bridge and Tele pickup in the neck.
Not just any humbucker and single coil pickup in there.
They're like fabric topped, right?
Yeah, they're sort of like rainbow coloured fabric topped pickups.
Pretty bonkers. And it's got like weird rainbow coloured inlays and like a black scratch plate with like rainbow dots on it. Yeah, it was very
And the volume and tone knob.
And volume tone knob have also got this kind of like rainbow thing to them. But it was actually, it looks quite mad, but when you see it in the flesh, it actually looks super tasteful. And yeah, again, didn't get to plug it in, unfortunately. But one to watch. I didn't know anything about Prisma.
Was that the only Prisma guitar that they had there?
It was the only Prisma guitar.
Because I did a little bit of research on them. After you sent me that text at lunch, and I think the main bulk of their instruments are like carved out of skateboard, not carved out of skateboards, but like they're made out of I don't know what skateboards are made out of, to be honest. So you always said ply. I doubt they're ply.
Hang 10 dudes.
But yeah, I assume that's what the that's what they're made out of.
I thought I recognised the name. I remember us doing a bit on them before. I think so as well. I'm
just having a look.
It doesn't actually say. It just says made out of old broken skateboards.
Yeah,
that kind of actually doesn't really tell you that much. And in fact, you get details on the neck, but there's no details on the actual body itself. I guess it's whatever skateboard's made out of. Birch ply, maybe?
That was kind of what I was thinking.
I guess it must be something fairly hard wearing. So
yeah,
that guitar was cool though.
Yeah, it was cool, and it was great to hook up with James as well and see some of the cool stuff that he had out and about. It was very swag.
I mean, I've just the first result when you Google what wood are skateboards made out of is the three main board building materials are Baltic birch ply,
there we go,
bamboo, and Canadian maple veneer.
Bamboo?
I guess it's just because there's loads of it.
And must be fairly lightweight.
It'll be super light. It's well cheap. It's extremely sustainable.
Yeah, not that hard wearing, though.
No. Probably not, no. Other materials include solid wood.
Welcome to Skate Talk, the solid wood. Internet's premier skateboarding podcast.
Yes,
Tony Hawk. Let's talk about him.
Did you see the video of Tony Hawk hanging out with his daughter while she drops in for the first time that went around on Twitter this week?
No, I did not.
It was really cute.
I remember him dropping in on a half pipe when he had a kid in between his legs.
I don't think it was that child.
Okay, fine.
Tony Hawk just seems to have lived like the absolute perfect
dream life.
Just the most perfect life. He's just, you know, he
loads of computer games.
Well, that's the thing, you know, he like spent his youth like skateboarding and then, you know, made a living out of it and then went, these video games, they seem pretty popular. Shall I do a bit of that? Did a bit of that. And
now he can't stop.
And if you follow him on Twitter, he is incredible because he is always posting about all the funny things that people say to him, thinking that he isn't Tony Hawk, but that he like looks like Tony Hawk. Which is really funny.
Conversely, the comedian Tony Hawks.
That's exactly what I was just about to say.
Who's from Brighton? I had no idea.
He used to have a great blog where he would post all of the fan mail that he would receive from people who thought he was Tony Hawk.
I read his book, Around Ireland
Hawks
with a
or
Fridge.
Hawk?
Hawks.
Right.
It was called like Hitchhiking Around Ireland with a Fridge.
Why did he have a fridge?
It was a bet.
It was a mini
fridge. I think it was a dare. Someone went, oh, I bet you couldn't hitchhike around Ireland with a fridge. And he went, oh, I bet I could. And then he did it and then wrote a book.
Wow, there we go.
Not Tony Hawk.
He would have put a skateboard underneath it, a couple of bungee ropes, and just pushed it around.
That's right. Probably would have done that, yeah.
So the most exciting thing at the Birmingham Guitar Show that wasn't a guitar
The curry.
We went to the curry. Next. We did. Yes, we did go and have a chickpea curry. We did. That was lovely. And a few beers as well, didn't we? You even had some beers, even though you were hungover.
We even got
a free beer.
We did get.
We got free beer at the bar because I asked for two bottles of beer. Went for bottles instead of tap, because you know you don't go for tap beers in a conference center. Like, you don't know when the last time the pipes were cleaned. So I went for two bottles of beer.
You don't see me like the sort of person that would, you know,
care that much. the amount of absolute junk that you put in your body, and you're worried about have the pipes been cleaned.
That's true. I've never thought about it like that.
Your pipes are definitely not clean. So.
But yeah, they gave us two different sized beers. So we pointed it out to them, and they were like, oh, sorry, and got the correct size beer. So two of them were the same. And then we're like,
it's the free one. Tried to give it to Matt, but I thought he won't be allowed to drink on the stand.
Oh, right. Well, there you go.
Aww. Yeah. Sorry, Matt.
I was desperate for a drink.
And so, sorry, just to run away from you here, this is a lot more interesting. Mark, you're having a beer tonight as well.
Yeah.
3 days running.
Yeah.
That's not very Mark Packham.
I had a hard week. We'll talk about it in the Patreon or something, but I had a hard week last week.
He did. He did have a hard week.
Nothing like, you know, no one died or anything.
I mean, it's pretty
bad. I just had to leave my house a bit.
Yeah, that's
the thing. I had to do some work that wasn't just sat in front of the computer at home. So I feel I'm still like, need a couple of relaxing beers to get over that.
So anyway, we went next to see the most exciting thing that wasn't a guitar at the guitar show. And that was, of course, the brand new Peterson Strobe Tuner. Mark Packham, how good was it?
Yeah, I thought this was going to be really rubbish. And it turns out it was actually really good.
Really, really, really good.
I mean, I can't use strobe tuners to save my life, but... if I was going to buy a strobe tuner, this is the strobe
Why
tuner
can't
I buy.
You use strobe
I just
tuners?
Don't really understand how it works.
I also don't understand how it works.
They just sort of spin around, and you've got to kind of make them stop spinning around. Is that right, Matt?
Yeah, that's basically right.
Because I could never handle the strobe setting on a TU3 either. Like,
no,
it's just I always thought it was broken.
In a way, I think it's actually more accurate.
Yeah.
It is harder to read. But what Peterson have always done really well is like what they call sweetened tunings, where certain strings are actually slightly higher or lower in pitch, which adjusts for, like, you know, how intonation is not perfect on a guitar. And it does actually make a difference. Like, some of them have like the top E strings like tuned up slightly, but not like a whole semitone or anything, just a very small amount.
Right.
That kind of just like brings things out a little bit. And actually, I was just reading that you can have preset colours depending on what tuning preset you want.
Oh, yeah.
Which I
thought
was quite cool.
I love it.
And I think it goes down to 432, the ultimate tuning. So
I don't know what that is.
432 hertz.
Oh, right. Okay, I see what you mean. Right, fine. The thing that was most impressive about this was the screen looked incredible. And just looking at this photo that you've taken, Joe, it doesn't show it off at all because it was constantly moving. So the photo's like a bit blurred. But the screen was so unbelievably crisp. And, you know, what I've always found with like kind of this style or this brand before is their stuff's not really ever been pedal board friendly. And this totally was. It was like, would fit perfectly on a pedal board. The screen was great, super bright, so if you're tuning in the dark, it would look good. And yeah, supposedly it's the best way to tune. It might take me a little while to get my head around it, but yeah, supposedly it's the most accurate.
I am on their website at the moment, and there's something that I just got really freaked out by. So the home screen of the website has got a banner which has got the tuner. The tuner's in a line on there, but they kind of really, really subtly move back and forward. Like, if you've got a menu open, and I was looking at it, and it was like, I was staring at it like, I think it's moving. And then it was like a visual, the note that doesn't go up.
Oh yeah,
shepherd tone. It's like a visual shepherd tone. I got really freaked out
weird.
For a
they
sec.
They're just really slowly coming towards.
I can't stop looking at it.
It's coming right for us.
You know, we still have a lot of things to cover from the Birmingham Guitar Show, and we are up at time for this week's regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. So before we go, I do want to mention one more thing, because we are going to carry on this on the Patreon episode. We've got loads of brands to talk about, so I'll let you know what we're going to be talking about over on the Patreon. We're going to talk about some of the weirdest guitars as well as a brand new prototype standard model from Crimson Guitars that we saw at the show. We're going to be talking about Eastman guitars, a brand that Mark has traditionally sat on the fence about, but has found a new love for, and some of the amazing things we saw on their stand. Origin Effects, we're going to talk about the Ibanez Vemurum Tube Screamer, Anasound's incredible new kickable reverb tanks, which we have mentioned on the podcast before, and Seth Backus Custom Shop Guitars, which we were extremely impressed by. But before we go, I do want to talk about one of the most interesting things that we saw at the show. And it was interesting because this company had thought about what was going to be at the show, how they were going to be able to compete, and what they could do to make their stand interesting. And it was Radio Shop Pickups, a little South Wales custom shop pickup maker, and they brought a pickup winding machine and made pickups there at the show, which was fantastic. It was what an amazing sort of insight into the sort of building of pickups to actually show us how it's done at the show.
We went over there and he was like, "Oh, do you want to have a go on the machine?"
We were already like three beers in.
Well, yeah, I was holding I was holding a small like Coke can sized beer, and he sort of clocked it, and I went, "I've had a couple of beers, I don't think I should," and he went, "Yeah, definitely not." So, but it was cool though. Yeah, in terms of being able to show off the product. I mean, pickups, you're never going to be able to really hear the differences
at a show
anyway. But with the ridiculous amounts of noise, they had just kind of given up on trying to demo stuff. I think they had an amp there, didn't they?
Yes, they did have an amp.
But he was like, "Yeah, we're just not plugging them in now because the best thing we can do is sit here and just wind pickups all day, and people come over and they're like, 'Wow, what is that?' And then we can start the conversation about the pickups."
It was great. You know, they had some price lists out. They had some box sets sort of ready to go. They were doing deals on the pickups. But it was really nice they were both absolutely lovely fellas. And it was great to just be able to talk to them about the options that they had and what they do. But they offer like a complete absolute custom shop service. So whilst they do their own preset versions, they also have a chat about what you're after. And they'll, they'll build like that. But yeah, I thought it was a great idea. And it was brilliant. It was a wonderful little old school machine. So I'll post pictures of it in the group and everything. But it was really, really cool to see. Anyway, Matt, unless there's a... what was your favourite thing at the show in the brief time that you got to actually walk around that wasn't your own product?
Do you know what? I kind of just wandered and went and spoke to a lot of people that I just know. So it's just good to catch up with other brands because... we're all doing the same thing at every single show. I actually really liked the Origin stand. I like the way that they had all their pedals set up on a little switcher, and they had a bunch of presets you could flick through.
Yeah.
But the most impressive thing was their vintage amp collection in these amazing looking racked flight cases. They were all going into a load box feeding into one cab. So they had like a vintage Plexi, an old Fender Twin head, I think. And it was just like an amazing looking booth. And then I also went and saw Thorpey, and we tried to have another go on the Deep Oggin, which was his new vibrato chorus pedal. But to be honest, just couldn't hear anything. It was like, it sounds a bit subtle. And I was like, I just don't think we can hear anything. I've just lost all sense of
hearing.
I'd say the one thing I didn't check out, and I don't know if you guys did, was the new DV Mark amp. The new DV Mark multi-amp that's got some sort of quad-core processor in it.
We didn't get a computer. Didn't get a chance to hear it.
Yeah, it's like a computer that loads profiles, similar to a Kemper, basically.
Oh, that's interesting.
With a whole bunch of kind of crazy tech in it. So I really wanted to go and check that out. But to be honest, again, just trying to try anything at the show was kind of impossible. It's just nice to go and see everything. Zilla had a great selection of cabs on display. And it was really good to talk to Matt from Monty's. Again, their stand always looks really, really good. They always look super professional as well. And he was telling me about some of the stuff they're doing, which I thought was quite cool.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, that is it for us here on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. We'll be continuing over on our Patreon, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode and loads of additional things like the Hall of Fame podcast. And $10 a month makes you an executive producer and gets your name read out in one breath by me.
You ready?
Yeah, I was born ready.
Okay.
Do I need to tickle his belly while he does this?
No. Adam Rice Crisp, Jake Cutmore, Robert Cousins, Rob Gould, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Hedge, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Henry James Baker, Juan Correa, Aaron Sermon, Blake Weiland, Andrew Goody, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lossett, Hans Arms, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordwick, Duncan Watson, Ed Bailey, Steve Buckle, DJ McCourts, Michael McCray, Carlos Mancha, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Tom, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moo Clare, Will Thompson, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew Gay, Stuart Tate, Scott Something, Sean Arbour, Christopher Wolfman, Chopperson.
That was good. I tried to slow it down a bit so that I was more articulate with everyone.
I feel like you did really well there.
I still pretty much made it. I keep forgetting to mention at the end of this, there is someone on there that I read out as Scott Something because they haven't put their surname in. So, Scott,
Scott O'Brien.
There is a Scott O'Brien. I read his name out.
There's another Scott.
There's
but
a Scott Hamilton.
The
I read his name out. But there is another Scott who hasn't got their surname
Great
on there.
Great Scott.
So... yeah, so I say Scott Something. So apologies, Mystery Scott.
He might not have a surname.
Scott
Mystery
Murray.
Scott. Mystery Scott.
Maybe I'll just call him The Scott.
Mystery Scott. I'm
Mystery
into that.
Mystery Scott. Okay, that's it. That's it. All right, well, that's it for this week. We'll see you next week for more of this nerdery. Farewell.
Bye.
Bye.
It's a mystery.